I don't know. I'm good at analogies, but I can't think up an analogy that stupid. It's like saying we're going to put out a bushfire and introduce water restrictions on the firefighters.
That's a pretty good analogy on the fly there, Richard.
Thanks. It's frustration, Ebony. It's frustration.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Institute, and at the time of recording this, on Tuesday the 26th of May 2020, The Guardian reports that Australia has 461 active cases of COVID-19, 6,559 recovered cases, and a sad 102 deaths. And because we've dealt so well with the health crisis, the Prime Minister has now turned his attention to the first of the economic packages intended to kickstart the economic recovery, focusing mainly on skills and IR reform, but clearly in keeping with his idea of a business-led recovery. And it comes hot on the heels of the discovery that the Morrison government made a $60 billion error in calculating the size of its JobKeeper wage subsidy package.
Well, it is being called the biggest budget blunder in Australian history.
Huge embarrassment for the tax office, which got the JobKeeper statistics so horribly wrong.
So sure, the estimate was overstated.
Which is an understatement. An astonishing tax office accounting bungle.
A $60 billion black hole.
Around $60 billion
blunder in the JobKeeper scheme.
The biggest error made in any budget.
This is a mistake you could have seen from space.
Raising questions about who's to blame.
Josh Frydenberg hasn't fronted up and taken responsibility. He should do that, and we will give him the opportunity.
I accept responsibility as well, and I'm accountable through the Parliament for my portfolio, for my department.
Isn't anything to brag about, particularly when we've missed out on almost a million casuals, many migrant workers, almost the whole of the university sector, local council workers.
And this is a government that couldn't run a bath, let alone be good economic managers.
Now, to put that in context, the size of the JobKeeper error at $60 billion is bigger than the Labor government's entire GFC stimulus package in 2008, which came in at $52 billion. So it's by far and away the biggest error in Australian political history by quite some margin. And that $60 billion that we all thought was circulating in the economy to boost growth, that's missing. And the government has been talking as if it understood Keynesian economics, but its reaction to this $60 billion underspend shows that they clearly do not think or act like Keynesians. So this week, I wanted to talk to our chief economist, Richard Dennis, to help explain what Keynesian economics is, why even conservative governments are turning to it during this time of crisis, and whether or not the coalition government's response is Keynesian or whether it's just been marketed that way. G'day, Richard.
Hey, Eb.
First of all, you don't have a spare $60 billion I could have, do you?
Oh, come on. Everyone's made a mistake, Eb. you know, we've all put the wrong numbers in a tax form at some point in our life. What's a few $60 billion between friends? I mean, sure, these people market themselves on being great economic managers whose number one goal in life is to manage our collective finances on their behalf. But, turns out we're all human.
So the $60 billion, quite seriously, that is just an enormous figure to get wrong. What has happened here?
Well, yeah, it's important to understand that there's actually two mistakes here, and both of them are really important. The first mistake is that Treasury predicted that that 6 million people would, well, more than 6 million people would be eligible for the JobKeeper. That was a forecast made by Treasury some time ago now, over a month ago, when they were looking at the design of policy and they were estimating how many people they thought would be eligible. So, yeah, nearly 2 months ago, Treasury forecast that 6 million people would get it, more than 6 million people would get it. And then entirely unrelated to that, there is no link here at all, entirely unrelated to that, the tax office was saying, oh, look, 6 million people are getting it. How cool. Bang on the forecast. Aren't we doing well? Well, both of them separately were spectacularly wrong. Treasury thought 6 million people would be eligible and that 6 million people would get it. And just last week, the ATO thought 6 million people were getting it. Well, both of them were completely wrong. So there's a lot we need to learn about this mistake, but it's a lot more significant than an accounting error. It's a spectacular failure of policy as well as a spectacular failure of accountability, because the whole point of the JobKeeper program was to pump a lot of money into the economy, because Treasury said, hey, GDP looks like it's going to fall 10%. We really need to shovel a lot of money into the economy as quick as we can. Well, they're still saying the economy is going to shrink by 10%, but we're now shoveling half as much money in as Treasury thought we would and thought we should, and that just last week the ATO told us we were. So we really have to understand how Treasury got the policy so wrong, and entirely separately, how the ATO, the tax office, got the oversight and scrutiny so wrong. Because just last Thursday, the Parliamentary Oversight Committee were told that 6 million people were getting it. So bad on the forecast, bad on the oversight, and now it's bad on the macroeconomics, because it's just proof that we're not doing enough to stimulate the economy.
Yeah, so the Treasurer and the Prime Minister seem to think this is $60 billion that essentially we've saved and that this is great news. So why are all the economists at the Australia Institute so alarmed by this news?
Look, we could all save a lot of money if we stopped maintaining our cars or maintaining our houses. In fact, businesses could save a lot of money if they stopped advertising or stopped doing research and development. The government developed a stimulus package to pump money into the economy because Treasury said that's what was needed. And remember last year, even before this crisis hit, the Reserve Bank was saying, hey, federal government, would you mind pumping a bit of money in? We can't cut interest rates much lower. Could you please use fiscal policy to stimulate the economy? Well, we ignored the Reserve Bank last year, but in February this year, briefly, for a short period of time, the government was listening to Treasury's Keynesian economic advice, saying if the private sector is shrinking its spending, then the public sector needs to pump some money into the economy. Otherwise, this economy is going to deflate even faster. So the government agreed in February that that's what it needed to do. The government was saying in March and April that that's what it was doing. Now we find out we've only been shoveling fuel in at half the rate we thought we were. And the government's trying to spin that as, hey, look, I saved some money. Well, no, if we needed the stimulus in February and we needed the stimulus in March, there is no reason to think we don't need it right now. We are under delivering an important service here. We could save a lot of money in the health budget by not helping sick people. We could save a lot of money in the education system by not educating so many people. The idea that we're saving money by not spending stimulus is just absurd.
So that brings me to this idea of Keynesian economics, which I think we started to hear a lot more of around the time that the government did announce its, what we then thought, $130 billion JobKeeper wage subsidy scheme. And it was around the time, you know, the government put all that together. It was about $200 billion worth of stimulus to keep the economy going and deliver growth when we'd shut whole sections of the economy down.
Oh, we are all Keynesians now. If COVID-19 has done one thing, it's to wed governments worldwide to that idea of stimulus. In that now vanished world of neoliberal austerity, stimulus was such a dirty word.
For anyone at home who's, you know, not familiar with the history of economics, what exactly is Keynesian economics and why is it linked to this pandemic? Why are we talking about it now?
Oh, come on, Eb. I know everyone's been cracking out their history of economic thought books in the last couple of weeks. I mean, who wouldn't? No, that's true. The libraries won't let us in. Okay, so once upon a time, pre-Keynes, all right, so think back in the Great Depression era, when recessions happened, when the Great Depression happened, when there was mass unemployment, the conventional wisdom at the time was that either these things happened and people would shrug their shoulders and say it was terrible but not think there was anything they could do, or worse, they thought, well, maybe we need to cut wages. Maybe if there's unemployment, that's because people are getting paid too much money. And similarly, they often thought, well, if the economy's going slow and people aren't paying so much tax, maybe government should spend less money. So think about, so that, you know, once upon a time, this was very common and it became common again in recent years. But once upon a time, the idea that if there was unemployment, it must be caused by high wages, and if the government was spending more than it was getting in a particular year, they had to cut spending. Those ideas were quite common before Keynes. Now, I'll explain what Keynes had to say in a minute, but just keep in mind that when we talk about GDP, gross domestic product, when we talk about the size of the economy, all we're really doing is adding up all of the things that we spend money on. So, you know, the coffee we buy, the car we buy, the massage we get, the haircut we get, the teachers we employ, the nurses we employ, the roads we build. Gross domestic product is literally just the sum of all the things that we produce in society. Mm-hmm. Now, in a recession, in a downturn, when the private sector is employing less people and making less stuff, if we cut people's wages, guess what they do? They go and buy even less stuff. So if we try to respond to unemployment, mass unemployment, by cutting everybody's wages, what we're actually doing is cutting everyone's incomes and cutting everybody's spending, and things spiral downwards. The same is true with government spending. If the economy is slowing and the private sector is not making as much stuff as it used to and consumers aren't buying as much stuff as they used to, if the government responds by buying less stuff, again, we get this downward spiral. So Keynesian economics, you know, comes from Lord Maynard Keynes. Maybe wasn't the first person to say it, but he was the first person to really popularize it. He basically said, look, what if the opposite's true? What if what government needs to do is step in and actually boost its spending and create demand so that the private sector has actually got more customers? And of course, how did we finally get out of the Great Depression? We got out of the Great Depression when governments started to do things. You know, in the US, they talk about, Roosevelt's New Deal. In Australia, we built the Great Ocean Road. We built the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And my favourite example, we built all those beautiful Art Deco ocean baths all up the coast. We went out there and we spent public money to create demand for labour, to directly create jobs, and indirectly create jobs because those people who were unemployed with zero income not only got a job, they went and spent their money and created other jobs in the economy. So Keynesian economics, basically, you know, there's a bit more to it, and economists can argue about these things for decades, and we have. but, you know, big picture, Keynesian economics says if there's mass unemployment, the government shouldn't worry about budget deficits. The government should keep spending money and create public demand for goods and services because the private sector that isn't, can't or won't.
And so the reason why we're talking about it now, obviously, is because we're in a recession. And so Keynesian economics, you know, will come up basically whenever there's an economic downturn because it's one of the primary ways that we understand economies can recover from recessions. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And you know, you've got to be careful with generalisations here, but it's pretty safe to say that virtually every trained economist in the Western world, pretty much all of them agree that Keynesian stimulus works. It's almost unarguable that government spending a lot of money when the private sector is contracting leads to shallower recessions, lower unemployment rates, and faster recoveries. Almost no one disagrees with that premise. The economists that have a problem with Keynesian stimulus don't actually argue that Keynesian stimulus doesn't really work. They say, but it doesn't work in the long run. Like, sure, you know, pumping water on a fire might help put out a fire, but if you go around putting out fires, people will start more of them. And this is the logic of this stuff, that sure, pretty much everyone agrees Keynesian economics works, but the critics say, but once governments start spending money, they can't stop themselves. They're reckless and irresponsible, and you can't stop them. So once you tell a politician it's okay to boost the dole, and once you tell a politician it's okay to employ some teachers and nurses, they might keep employing teachers.
Where will it end?
Where will it end? Oh, the humanity. So it's really important to understand that almost no one argues that Keynesian stimulus doesn't work. It's just that some people, some economists and a lot of politicians don't like that. They say it's too hard to turn the tap off. And, you know, there are solutions to that. But, you know, here we are in the middle of a crisis with, you know, mass unemployment, hundreds of thousands of people moving into the official ranks of the unemployed, more than 1 million people with a shortage of work that they didn't have 2 months ago. And you got some people haggling about what's going to happen in 3 or 4 years' time.
And so the opposite of Keynesian economics would be, let's say, austerity, where everyone is told to tighten their belt, the government reduces spending, cuts services because it's either worried about the debt or just, you know, too much spending. Is that how you judge it?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's lots of alternatives to Keynesian economics, but I think the most significant one in our political debate is, yeah, this idea that we have to, quote, live within our means, and that to borrow money now is reckless, and yeah, that the best thing for the government to do is control spending and balance the budget as soon as it can and not incur too much debt. So yeah, you get this story, you know, the Prime Minister at the press club today, kind of back to the whole living within our means type thing. And there's so many problems with the logic behind that, it's kind of hard to know where to start. But the key point is that's exactly the thinking that led to the Great Depression lasting 10 years. Like, people often ask, how long will it take for us to recover? You know, they often ask me, you know, Richard, how long will it last? How long before unemployment comes down? And there's lots of reasons to be cautious about making predictions about that. But the main one is that no economist has any idea how long it will take for the economy to recover, because no economist has any idea what the government policy is going to be.
It's going to be, yeah.
And that's what will determine how long we have high unemployment for. That's why we had 10% unemployment for so long during the Great Depression, because it took a decade for politicians to go, stuff it. What if we actually went and created a lot of jobs for people? And as soon as they started doing that, things started
improved.
To work.
Yeah.
So we have to be very careful talking about how long it will take for the economy to recover, because it's like saying the implication is how long after you plant a seed is it before it grows, or, you know, as if there's some sort of natural phenomena at play here, when actually the length and depth of our recession will be determined by how good at economic management our government is. And while it started off talking a Keynesian game, you know, it's now showing that it doesn't think Keynesian or act Keynesian. It's already looking for savings in its stimulus budget. I mean, I don't know. I'm good at analogies, but I can't think up an analogy that stupid. It's like saying we're going to put out a bushfire and introduce water restrictions on the firefighters.
That's a pretty good analogy on the fly there, Richard.
Thanks. It's frustration, Ebony. It's frustration.
So speaking of this approach where they kind of seem to take a Keynesian approach at the beginning with, you know, an effective doubling almost of Newstart, now called JobSeeker, and a big wage subsidy scheme, the government seems to be saying that it's going to stick to its original six-month timeline and that in September, JobSeeker will go back to below the poverty line and JobKeeper's potentially going to be wound back as well. So correct me if I'm wrong, but that's a huge amount of... Well, that's a huge reduction in government spending. Am I right?
That's right. It's contractionary fiscal policy. It is the exact opposite of stimulatory fiscal policy. What the government is promising to do at the moment is they're promising that they will spend less money in the second half of the year than they are at the moment. That is the exact opposite of Keynesian economics.
They're promising to shrink the economy.
So, and let's sort of think this through. We've got rising unemployment, lower than previous wage growth. We've got people working less hours, and we've got people going into debt to meet their expenses. So household income is falling. Does anyone think that falling household consumption will be an engine of growth in the second half of the year? Probably not. We're about to have the lowest rate of population growth in decades, arguably in our post-war history. So usually we have a couple of 100,000 people moving to Australia every year. It's a big engine of growth, particularly in the property market. That's not going to happen. So consumers are going to be spending less. There's going to be far less consumers than we were expecting. The world economy is slowing, so it's unlikely our exports will boom. And we can't let tourists in, and we can't let foreign students in, at least not in the numbers that we're used to. So is that going to be an engine for growth? So if consumer spending isn't going to drive growth and exports aren't going to drive growth, the government says we're going to have this business-led recovery. Well, why would a business build a bigger factory if it's got less customers than it had this time last year? Why would anyone be planning for expansion right now if the domestic markets and the international markets are declining? So the only thing, and this is what Keynesian economics is all about, if private consumption's declining and business investment's declining and your exports are declining, what's the one thing you control? Government spending. Well, our government is promising that it will cut spending in the second half of the year, which by definition, as you said, means it will be contributing to a decline in economic activity in the second half of the year. So it's not just cruel, it's not just unfair, it's not just nasty to say, well, the unemployed have had it too good for too long and they had a little pay rise there for 6 months, but, you know, we've got to whip them back into shape. That's not just cruel and nasty. It's dumb. It is the exact opposite of what the Reserve Bank said we should be doing and what Treasury said we should be doing, and I'd say the vast majority of economists say we should be doing. But, hey, we're going to balance the budget and we're going to punish the unemployed and we're going to show the people who kept their jobs that we're going to crack the whip on the lazy unemployed again.
Yeah. So that, I think, brings us to the Prime Minister's speech at the press club today, where he seemed to be announcing, I think we've got a new jobs-related package called JobMaker. It's three different puns on jobs now, yep. And counting.
We need a job maker plan for a new generation of economic success that can guarantee the essentials that Australians rely on. Our job maker plan will be guided by the principles that we as Liberals and Nationals have always believed in, to secure Australia's future and put people first in our economy.
But JobMaker seemed to entail a big focus on skills and rebuilding the vocational education sector, again, business-led, as well as some IR reforms kind of seem to be the two headlining issues. Is that going to fix the problem?
No. All of these things, leaving aside the fact that, you know, every government has said it's working on skills and every government says it's been working, literally, like that's like this is not a new idea, right? And if you said to the Prime Minister a year ago, do you think it's important that we, you know, improve the way we impart skills onto kids, he'd have said, oh yes, it's one of our priorities, right? So everyone always says we need to focus on skills because it's actually a great way to blame the unemployed for being unemployed.
Because right. They're not that. Skilled.
Yeah, I've got the wrong skills, idiots. Now, of course, no one's going to argue, myself included, with the fact that, well, having a better education system, a better occupational training system, vocational education training system, no one's going to say it's a bad idea. Of course, it's a good idea. Similarly, no one's going to argue, myself included, that having an industrial relations system that helps employers and employees sort out their differences and generate equitable outcomes, yeah, good, sign me up. Everyone supports that. These are not new ideas. What is a problem, what's an old idea is, or what an old problem is that different people have got entirely different ideas about what makes for a fair industrial relations system, and people have got entirely different ideas about what makes for effective vocational education system. But leaving aside that these are actually kind of permanent tasks to work on, they're both attempts to shift the debate away from the macroeconomics. Is the government's Keynesian stimulus enough? The government's simply trying to shift the debate away from its obligations to, quote, manage the economy at a macroeconomic level towards a bit of victim blaming by saying, oh, look, the problem is the unemployed. They're not looking hard enough, so we'll cut the dole. That'll whip them into shape. And the problem is the young kids, they don't have the right skills. Well, don't blame us for their unemployment. We've got a new skills agenda. Or the problem is, you know, the unions or the businesses can't strike the right deals. So, you know, this is politics 101. It's just shifting the debate today away from his obligation to manage the macro economy, he's shifting it away from himself onto the unemployed, onto the young people, and indeed onto the industrial relations system. It's not going to reduce unemployment. It's not going to give people a reason to feel confident and go and spend more of their money, or it's not going to make businesses more confident to go and build a new factory. But it is, as if you saw the press conference today, or the press club speech today, it is making the Prime Minister a lot more confident because he thinks he's found a way to shift the blame away from what he's doing and away from his $60 billion underspend on his own stimulus. And shift it back on to some vulnerable groups that, you know, frankly, he knows exactly how to blame.
So if you were to summarise today's announcement in a sentence, how would you describe it?
Oh, a cover-up. What we know is that the Treasury thinks GDP is about to fall off a cliff, that Treasury and the Reserve Bank think the government should have a big interventionist fiscal stimulus. The government's been bragging about what a big, appropriately sized fiscal stimulus it's got. Just last week it was saying how appropriate the size of the fiscal stimulus was. Now it's discovered that it's actually failing spectacularly to deliver on that promise. It's shifting the goalposts from what should we have been doing to what are the unemployed doing and what are the young people doing. So, yeah, today's just, unfortunately, you know, yet another opportunity to shift attention away from big problems and to blame the victim.
So to paraphrase, it's using microeconomic policy reforms to distract from its failures on the macroeconomic front.
Oh, absolutely. And to an attempt to recast the whole problem, not as a macroeconomic one of a once in a century size recession, but back to some old faithfuls in terms of the unemployed being reluctant to look and young people not having the skills the market needs. When the economy's booming along, when you do a good job of managing the economy, employers take on unskilled people and teach them how to do the work. But when the economy's flat as a tack and employers can pick, you know, one of, you know, from every 100 applicants, they get to pick the one they want the most. Of course, yeah, they pick the one with the most skills. Why wouldn't they? But the reason that the other 99 people miss out isn't because of a lack of skills. It's because of a lack of jobs.
But essentially, when it comes down to it, economically speaking, the government's brought a knife to a gunfight, so to speak.
Oh, look, I think it's worse than that. I think they bought a clown mask to an earthquake tragedy.
Oh, Jesus. That's rather sobering. Well, we might wrap it up there, Richard. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we go?
Of course. Wash your hands and stay the hell away from people.
Well, we might wrap it up there. Thanks very much, Richard.
Thanks, Eb.
This has been a special episode of Follow the Money, and we're aiming to bring you shorter but more frequent episodes during the pandemic, so please stay tuned and make sure you're subscribed on your favourite podcast app. You can check out the Australia Institute's Economics of a Pandemic webinar series at our website, tai.org.au/webinars. And our next event is on Wednesday, the 27th of May at 11 a.m. with Greens leader Adam Bandt talking about a Green New Deal with Richard Dennis. For the latest health information, you can check health.gov.au or listen to the ABC's excellent CoronaCast podcast, which comes out daily. This episode was recorded on Tuesday, the 26th of May, 2020, and things may have changed since recording. You can visit tai.org.au for all our latest research and content, and we're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is ebony_Bennett with a double N double T, and Richard Dennis is at RDNS_TAI. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy, and the opening montage was created by Lucy Law. And our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum. And remember, stay 1.5 metres away, keep washing those hands, and thanks for listening.